is the anthem of the adventurer. The show for men who are tired of forsaking their dreams, who are willing to risk, to dare greatly, and know in their soul that their desire for adventure is good. It's time to venture into the wild places in our hearts. Here's your host, Dan Sayner.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Anthem of the Adventurer podcast. Welcome back for those who have been anxiously awaiting another episode of the show. As you know, we do things a little bit differently than some of the other podcasts you may listen to. And our guest today gave me another really great way to think about how I produce this show and why I do it. And I think you're going to really, really enjoy what he has to say. Today, we're talking with Alan Arnold, who is the executive producer of content over at Wild at Heart. And he has been a veteran in the publishing industry behind some of the biggest writers in Christian writing the past couple of decades here, like Max Lucado, Frank Peretti, Ted Decker, and John Eldridge, who we know and love. He wrote a book that is extremely timely for our day and age called Chaos Can't. And it's his personal quest to dig deep into the topic of chaos and understanding what it is at its root, how we can overcome it and emerge stronger. And one of the things you're going to hear us talk about is just, you know, for guys who are in this decade that a lot of us have committed to of, you know, taking a back seat, taking the lowest seat at the table, not self-promoting, committing to foundational growth in our heart. Sometimes we can get that a little backwards and not share what God's doing in our lives, not create things, not want to put things out there because it feels like self-promotion. And yes, I know that sounds weird when you're listening to someone on a podcast, but that's exactly what I am personally struggling with a little bit. And so, you know, we have a show every couple of months because whenever the Holy Spirit prompts me, I put out an episode. And Alan was very gracious in saying, that's a really awesome approach. And also that I don't need to be afraid to put out content because it's not promoting me. I'm not selling action figures of myself or paintings of my face or anything, but promoting this message that we all really care about, that we want more adventure in our lives. We want to show our kids and our wives and our friends and our families that adventure is important and it fills us up. It's what helps bring more joy and life and fullness to our lives. And as you're going to hear Alan talk about, we can use our creativity to bring about beauty and order to the chaos in our lives and bring life. So you're going to really love our conversation here with Alan Arnold. Before we get into that, though, I want to share a special offer that we have for you as we're coming into the holiday season. I'm partnering with a really amazing company called The Adventure Challenge. No surprise. it's all about adventure. They are a company based out in California. They have a great mission, great message. Got the privilege of meeting one of the teammates out there, and they are all on fire for Christ, as well as bringing out this message, like I am here, that adventure is important, and sometimes you need a little bit of inspiration. So head on over to theadventurechallenge.com and check out their books. They're all scratch-off adventures for couples, for families, for friends. They have a solo edition out now, as well as an advent calendar if you want to get in on the holiday spirit. And what you do when you crack open the book, it'll have a couple of icons about what to expect, but otherwise you don't know what you're up for until you commit to the challenge. You scratch it off and you go do it and then share about it on your favorite social media profile of choice. So you've seen me post about it a couple of times. We get into those once every month or two, and it is just a little breath of fresh air, a lot of spark for our adventures as a family, a lot of fun. So if you want to check it out for yourself, we have a promo code for you. Go to theadventurechallenge.com and enter the promo code at checkout, Dan10, all capital word, all capital letters there, Dan10, and you'll get 10% off your first order of whatever you like there. So without further ado, now we have our interview with Alan Arnold. Enjoy. Welcome to another episode of the Anthem of the Adventurer. I'm Dan Zahner, your host, and here with another member of the Wild at Heart team. You know, we love those guys and gals over there, and I'm really excited to get to talk to our guest today. We met very briefly at the Wild at Heart boot camp last October, and yes. Since then, he's come out with a book called Chaos Can't. Alan Arnold, welcome. It's great to talk to you today, and I have been really digging your book. I'm working on my second read through in a more detailed and thorough way. And I'm just loving it. I really am so glad you listened to God's prompting to write this in the way that you did, which we'll get into in a little bit. So welcome.
Yeah. Thanks, Dan. I'm excited to be in this conversation with you. And for the guys that are listening, I think it's going to be a wild, good adventure of a conversation. So I'm excited to get started. Yeah.
Well, as usual with our guests, we'd like to do things a little different than some podcasts, and we're going to start it off with our challenge. So what would you challenge me and the guests to do in this next week? You know, we're leading up to Christmas, to embrace some more adventure in our lives, and especially in how it relates to creativity and beating back that chaos that you're writing about.
Yeah. So this is, it's a two-part challenge, but I know they can do it. I know you guys are in. Here's what it is. First, I want you to start for the next 30 days. If you can do this every morning before you get out of bed, I want you to focus on living that day with expectancy, not expectations. So every morning when you get up, it's releasing control of your day, basically. It's saying, God, Father, Abba, I am expectant for what you have today, and I know I don't control the day. And so I may have my to-do list, and I may have my, you know, things in my mind that need to happen, but I release all of it, all of my planning, all of my ideas, all of my validation, the things I do for that. And now I enter into the day with expectancy. So part one is expectancy, and expectations are like a world apart. So it's setting the course of your day like a compass before your feet hit the ground, and enter into that day agreeing with God that you will follow his rhythm, his lead, and whatever he brings, you're all in. And the second part of that, it's tied together, is at the end of the day, ask God, as you lay your head down on your pillow, God, what is your interpretation of today? I know, like, in other words, you know, at the beginning of the day, I release my expectations and I choose to live in expectancy. And at the end of the day, then I might have gotten through the day pretty beat up and said, man, this day was just terrible. Like, it was a bad day. I blew it. I that. But that's our interpretation of our own day. And so when we go to bed that night, go, God, before I fall asleep, tell me your interpretation of today. And then agree to embrace that, because God may say, man, I'm so proud of you, Dan, how you lived that day. And you're thinking, I blew it six ways to Sunday. And he's like, no, you actually were walking with me and you did really well. Yeah, you tripped a little, but you did really well. So it's that two-part challenge: wake with expectancy and let go of expectations, and then ask God at the end of the day for his interpretation of how the day went. For 30 days.
I really like that a lot. Oh, man. I've gotten into a new practice recently of doing that prayer of examine at the end of the day, where just kind of like, here's how my day went, I gave it over to God kind of thing. But even that is my interpretation. Like, it's all, hey, this is how I think things went, God, I'm giving it to you.
Right.
But listening to what God's interpretation of it is and really paying attention to agreeing with that is so much more powerful.
When you look at the kind of the heroes of the faith, you know, Joseph, how do we think he interpreted those years in prison versus God's interpretation? And now with time, our interpretation.
Yeah.
You know, and take that example. I mean, man, with anybody really in scripture, Noah, Moses, you know, Daniel, David, you start looking at their lives and you go, they were faithful for the most part, and they saw what was happening in the moment. But we know God's interpretation through scripture of what was really going on. And so to let go of our limited view for God's bigger perspective, man, that it just changes everything, because it takes us out of our small narrative and it lets us go, wow, God, that, like, he'll show you things you never thought of during the day. He'll highlight the most important part of the day, which you thought was the interruption, you know? So it's wild and it's cool, and it'll rock your world if you do it.
That's awesome. I love it. God is so good. We were actually talking about this in a very similar way last night on our Becoming a King group that we've been doing for 2 months now and going to be doing for another 10, about how, like, doing in the dailies, measuring in the decade. Like, mm-hmm. there's a lot of ways where we feel we've absolutely screwed it up during the day, but honestly, we're doing fine when you look at it a decade later, you know? And so I think that's a really kind interpretation of ways that your colleague over there, Morgan, has brought to the world. I really love that phrase that he talks about, measure doing the daily, but measure in the decade.
I do too. Yeah. That book, Morgan's, really, it's based on his life message, and man, it's phenomenal. Morgan was the one who really first got me looking at what does it mean to be a son of God. That has influenced my last decade more than almost anything, was that shift into living as a son, not just knowing.
Yeah. Well, let's get into that a little bit. Yeah. So who is Alan as a son of God? Like, who are you? What are you about?
Well, man, what I'm about, I would say the short answer is I am about pursuing God as a son and from an awakened heart. And that plays out in our dreams and in our creativity and in our passions and through our family. But it's knowing God as a son and living life in rhythm with him as a father. That's like, I do that full time at Wild at Heart. My role is executive producer of content. So the podcast, and Sons for Millennial Guys and Wild at Heart for our main audience, I produce and also work with a lot of content in terms of books and study guides and basically the world of Wild at Heart. And I love it. And it helps men and women come alive because they start to live in freedom from an awakened heart. And then in my free time or my separate time, Wild at Heart, I had this huge passion to help people learn how to pursue their creativity with God. And a lot of times that's convincing people they are creative, because a lot of guys were like, yeah, that's not me. I just punch the clock every day, or I'm just getting by. But the reality is we're all creative. And if you don't think you're creative, that's the first thing that's been stolen from you.
Yeah.
Is even the concept that you're creative. And so it's helping people navigate their dreams and their creativity with God. And so they align really well, my Wild at Heart role and what I do with people in my own time as a coach and as a speaker and as a writer. But yeah, man, Dan, that's what makes me come alive. And all of this for me really started just a little over a decade ago. So I spent the first probably 35 years of my life, 38 years of my life, living as a very driven, high productivity, make it happen guy. I would be the last guy standing in any competition for our business. I would be the one to kick open the door, make it happen. It was like my calling card, and I was unfortunately really good at it. And it was a slow motion numbing of my heart, because I was basing my entire validation on what I did, what I got done, how I made it happen. Yeah. And so it worked for a season, but even in that season, I knew my heart was pretty numb, and I was just getting adrenaline hits from the next big project, the next big win, and you know, now I look back at that and I'm so grateful that God rescued me from that. I knew God during that time. Like, I was a Christian and I was a believer. I was working at a Christian publishing company a good bit of that time as a publisher for, you know, books about God and story and about the kingdom. And even so, I had my validation all twisted. And so it's been a rescue. And the last, I don't know, 12 years of my life have been the very best because it's stepping into each day as a son.
That's awesome. It's kind of funny. Like, yeah, I'm you know, basically a decade and a half back from where you're at and feeling very much like I'm just coming out of the woods, like, you know, Christian since I was a young kid and very driven and, you know, quote unquote successful by worldly standards, but a lot of time still feel kind of numbed, even though I'm, you know, starting the process of having a more awakened and alive heart. I definitely resonate with that. Especially for those who are listening and are like me, like, I've got a non-creative career by worldly standards. You know, I'm an engineer, or I manage operations. Like, what would you say to people like that who are like, yeah, I've got a, you know, degree that says I am not creative by definition, you know, like I follow the formulas and I help other people follow the formulas.
Well, I would say don't define yourself by your degree. Number one, your degree shouldn't tell you who you are. It just tells you what maybe you're really good at or what you've spent time learning. But any profession, whether you're an architect or a basketball coach or a teacher or an Uber driver, like, there is always creativity involved. And we never just check our brains at the door for what we do. And so even in jobs where we might say, yeah, that there is a formula or there is certain things that need to be done, the people that excel are the people that even then imagine what could be and think outside the box. And whatever profession you're in, it hasn't stayed static, I can guarantee you, from 20 years ago, 10 years ago, 50 years ago. Like, architecture is not the same today as it was. I mean, people drawing the blueprints by hand, you know, back then, and now a lot of it's computer generated. Basketball, the plays, the rhythm of the game is not the same today as it was 5-10 years ago. So anything you're doing is changing. And so when you start being the person that sees what could be, that's high creativity. And beyond that, I would say real quick, we are sons of the Creator. We have His DNA in our bloodstream. He breathed life into us. So how can we not be creative? We have the DNA of the Creator in us. It may be dormant because we're not using it or don't believe it. But in every great movie, like we've seen, the hero never believes who he is at the beginning, but he is. And the whole path of the movie is discovery. And so in our creativity, it's often just a journey of discovery. Like, yep, you're creative. And if you don't believe it, well, start the journey to discovering it because you are. But just because we are doesn't mean we ever use the creativity. So I think a lot of people live and die and have unfulfilled potential. But that doesn't mean they weren't creative. It just means, unfortunately, they squandered their creativity. They shut it down, or they turned it off, or they walked away from it.
Yeah. Can you speak to, like, a little bit more about the need for creativity, and especially in this crazy hour on the earth, like, why do we need it?
Well, it starts with this. Like, I could give you the end answer first as a soundbite, but to take just a little bit more of a journey into it, the very first thing that God identifies himself as is Creator, Genesis 1:1. In the beginning, God created. In other words, very first thing I want to tell you about myself is I'm a creator, the creator. Genesis 1:2, what is the first lesson we learn in Scripture? The very first lesson is really important because the first thing you teach people about is something you want them to not miss, to know. It's a foundational thing. And the very first thing God as creator teaches us is how to overcome chaos. It's the very first lesson of scripture. And he does that in Genesis 1:2. It talks about how the Spirit of God hovers over the surface of this murky, inky blackness, the empty and the void. Hebrew scholars say whatever else is going on, that's chaos. And so the Spirit of God is hovering over chaos. And in Genesis 1:3, what he does is he transforms chaos into beauty, life, and order. Mm. And the wildness of creativity, the creation days, light, oceans, deserts, mountains, stallions, wildflowers, honeybees, man, woman, the most wild creativity is the response God has to chaos. His response to chaos is creation. So why is creativity important to us? Well, we live in a world of chaos, a world of empty void places, a world of confusion, of disorder, of chaos. And the answer I believe God has for us is just as I, as creator, entered into the chaos and transformed it into beauty and life and order with my wild creativity, you do the same through the very things that make you come alive. And so, you know, I'm not a painter, so God doesn't invite me. I have no desire. I have no gifting in becoming a painter. I could take some classes and I could, you know, be better than I am today, but I'm not a painter. So he doesn't call me to change the world through my painting or many other. I'm not a chef, you know, or all kinds of things that other people are. But whatever you're gifted at, God then says, come with me. And through that gifting, your creativity, your presence, and your gifting, who you are and what you do, let's change the world for good. And so that's a little bit longer answer, but it's important to know it's not just, well, you know, when you do stuff you love, it makes your heart come alive. It does. That's true. But there's a bigger story at play. The bigger story is we are in part God's answer to chaos, us. Like, what's God's response to chaos? Well, in Genesis 1:2, it was creation. Today, his response to chaos in part is you and me. We are the response. But the problem is we let chaos shut us down. And so instead of changing the chaos to beauty, life, and order, we try to wait it out, sit on the sidelines. Well, when it, you know, when it gets less chaotic, I'll get back to what I love to do. Or man, in chaotic times, like it'd be silly for me to focus on my creativity. Like I need to get serious and, you know, just pray more. Well, pray more is good, but your creativity is already part of what God's invited you to do. You don't have to ask God about that. You just can do it. And when you come alongside him and do it with him, you are part of his response to countering chaos. So that's a quick kind of, you know, packed answer with a lot of things we could talk for days on. But that's the short answer is your creativity matters more than you think it does. It was given to you by God. God doesn't underestimate your creativity. He gave it to you. The enemy doesn't underestimate your creativity. He knows who you could be. And as John Eldridge says, fears it and tries to take you out every way he can, largely through chaos. And so the only person in the room out of the enemy, God, and us that underestimates our gifting and creativity is us.
Yeah.
And so that's part of what I want to talk to you about today. And what I'm excited about is like, if we can awaken people listening to step into their gifting at a time like this, it's more needed than ever. It's more critical than ever to bring order and beauty in life and have chaos be pushed back for goodness and life. And we get to be a part of that if we will wake up and enter into it with God.
Yeah. I love that. And one of the things I like to focus on when I'm trying to get myself out of stuck is like, okay, what does success in this look like? Like what are we trying to produce here? And you talked about these three words of beauty, life, and order. How would you define those?
Yeah.
Like how would we know it when we see it?
Great question. So Dan, I would say order, first of all, is not, some people use order for like, you know, they're highly detailed. And so order is an orderly desk, or my car interior is always really clean, or everything's in its place. That's not what I mean by
order. I always think the Empire in Star Wars when I think order, like stormtroopers all white and polished all in a row. Yes, and everybody's the same, right. And they right. can't hit anything.
Right. And everything. Yeah. And it's very regimented and aligned. And that's not what I think order means. To me, order, when I say that, you can replace that word with trueness. So something is in order when it is functioning in trueness. And so when we are not functioning in a healthy way, a lot of, you know, the medical world will say you have a disorder. You have a disorder, even if your part of your disorder is making things really, you know, squared away and neat, and you're very anal, it's still called a disorder. Not, you're not a more ordered person, you're disordered. And so by order, I mean trueness. What is, when God created oceans, there was a trueness. But oceans are wild and messy and turbulent, but they are ordered because they are what they were intended to be. And so that's what I mean by order. Beauty, you know, you can look at that in the sense through the same filter, is beauty is the most beautiful that a man or woman can be, is being who they were truly created to be when they're living out of their real identity. And so a lot of times, you know, you see people try to, you know, women will try, and sometimes men, when they're trying to be more seductive, they will try to put on all this makeup, or for men, they'll try to work out and have the like killer, you know, Hercules body. And and I'm not dissing like a healthy
body. Nothing wrong with that.
What I'm saying is, we're trying to look like some, we're trying to compensate for what's inside for on the outside.
Yeah.
And we're trying, and the result is you don't even, you're not as beautiful because you've somehow focused on all the externals, what you wear, how you do your hair, you know, how you do your workout. And some of those things are fine, but true beauty is being in your real identity. And when you know that and you're walking in that with God, man, you know, it's like people are drawn to you at that point. Mm. So that
sounds almost like order, but more so like it's order that brings refreshing and life, you know,
right.
By, you know, kind of experiencing this created order of God.
Right. Totally. And, you know, when we have, like, you know, the other things, you know, there's beauty, there's order, there's hope, there's life. I mean, to me, all of those things are along the same line of how do we bring things back to how God intended them to be in their true form? This world was not created to be chaotic. The enemy brought in chaos. Adam and Eve didn't bring in chaos. The enemy brought in chaos. Chaos, when the serpent came into the garden in the story of Adam and Eve, before they chose to sin, he was a chaotic being in the garden. They didn't usher in chaos. Chaos came in, and chaos was a part of the reason they fell. Mm-hmm. Because, and so we need to shift our thinking from a lot of the chaos in the world. It's quite freeing to go, it's not, I didn't cause it. Sometimes we cause our own chaos, but a lot of times we didn't cause it. We live in a world of chaos. It's not the world God intended. And yet Jesus warns us quite clearly in, you know, if you look at John 16:33, he says, in this world, you will have trouble. You will have, substitute the word trouble for chaos. You will have chaos. But his full scripture verse on that, just in that one passage, that one verse, is he tells us, I'm telling you this, and I'll just read the whole thing to you. I've told you these things so that in me, you may have peace. In this world, you will have trouble, but take heart. I have overcome the world. John 16:33. Why is he telling us in this world there will be trouble? Is he telling that to us so we will fear or worry? No, he's saying, I'm telling you this, you'll have peace. So it's kind of this oxymoron statement of, I'm going to tell you something so you'll have peace. Hey, the world is a messed up place. And you think, well, wait, I thought you were telling me something so I'd have peace, like that the world is a beautiful, calm, safe place. But he says, no, I'm telling you so at peace. The world is a chaotic place. And take heart, not because you just need to feel good or pretend it's okay or get used to it. Take heart because I've overcome the world. I've overcome everything, past, present, future. So when you're with me, can you overcome chaos? Absolutely. When you're with Jesus, you can overcome it. And that's why you can have peace. And that's why your heart can thrive in the midst of chaotic times. But when we try to do it in our own strength, it never works. Anytime we face chaos in our own strength, we either get spun up, shut down,
yeah,
or become more chaotic ourselves. But we never, you know, a lot of guys are like, well, I'll just out chaos chaos. And the problem is, you know, if you are trying to overcome something by becoming more like it, you're on a fool's mission.
Plus, it's already way better at it than you are. It's had millennia of experience.
Right. And it's made you like it in the hopes of overcoming it, but you're actually becoming more like it. So it's, you know, those things don't work. And that's why there's a better way. And that's why I wrote the book, because I was really tired of chaos kicking my butt. I was really tired of, at the end of the day, wishing I had reacted differently or being just tired of the weariness. And I was looking for relief from chaos in the most surface ways rather than realizing God's actually inviting me to live chaos free, not to numb it, not to pretend it doesn't matter, not to downsize my dreams, but to actually live chaos free in the midst of a chaotic world.
So how do we do that? You talk about this in the book of like this concept of the master's circle, like the Mask of Zorro. If anybody watched that movie, we recently did our Becoming a King group again. Was
that's a great
not one. A movie I was expecting to ever watch again, but it was like so profound. This concept of initiation through this idea of the master's circle. Can you talk about that and how it kind of plays out in the book? And
yeah, totally. So that's one of my favorite movies, and my favorite part of the movie is when Anthony Hopkins is the older Zorro, the mentor sage, takes the younger man who's becoming Zorro, and he's showing him how to fight, you know, because he says first, like the younger Zorro is all out for revenge. And he's saying, yeah, you would have fought bravely and died quickly. And instead he says, let me show you how to fight smarter. Let me train you. So in the book, I take people through what I call kind of a riff on the master's wheel, which is 11 levels. And each level is only about 2 pages. So this is not, yeah, you know, I don't, it doesn't, you might think 11 levels, like that's going to be a 5-year program, but it's like,
it left me kind of wishing it was, but maybe well, that's the next book.
I at least wanted to give people a taste of like, there's always a deeper way to go into each level, but at least here are the 11 levels to me. And the 11 levels are, how do I go from being a person that's spun up by chaos into transforming the atmosphere in the realm around me into beauty, life, and order? And so the first level, the inside circle, is width. That's the core level. So in the movie, they start on the outside and go inward. But the goal, kind of the flaw of the movie, if you will, the goal of the training circle was revenge. And revenge is not a motive that's going to help you overcome chaos. So I take people from the inner circle to the outer representing the world around us. So we start in the center, go outward. The first level in the middle is width, because if we don't begin with God in seeing life as walking with God, as a pursuit of our identity with God, if we don't start there, and then at some point raise the white flag and say, God, rescue me. Well, it really doesn't work that way, because the inside of our circle was hollow or empty. And so we're just basically saying we're going to maneuver life in our own strength, and then we're going to cry out for help when we can't make it. And so instead it says, no, we're going to start equipped with our true identity with God, and we're going to learn level by level by level how not to let chaos in, how to understand what chaos really is. And these levels, you know, keep progressing wider and wider as they go outward. And by the last level, not only are we not letting chaos in into our hearts, into our lives, but we're actually going way further, which is, yep, I've mastered not letting chaos in. I'm not becoming spun up anymore. But beyond that, in my realm of authority, in my home, with my kids, with my wife, with my community, with my church, with my occupation, my degree, my talent, my, you know, the way I make a living, I'm actually making those places less chaotic, less disordered by my presence and by what I do, who I am and what I do. So, Dan, that was my goal in those 11 levels, was take people through, you know, it's always, if we keep it as a theory, by that I mean, if we keep it kind of this high level, yeah, I'd love to be free of chaos. That's a great concept. And I'm going to go into each day and I'm going to wish I was chaos free. It's, you'll never make it. Like, it's reactive. It's pie in the sky thinking, and you'll never have the strength or ability in your own to do that. And so the training circle was my attempt to say, let's make it practical. Let's look at things you can do, things you can try, understanding of what's really going on with the enemy coming against you. A lot of people ask me, like, why does chaos seem so personal? And the reason the chaos comes against you and me and the listener, the reason it feels personal is because it is personal. Like, the enemy knows your buttons. The enemy knows your scars. The enemy knows your fears. And the enemy will use all of that against you by throwing chaos in just the right combination to try to set you off. And what sets me off, I might tell you that, Dan, and you might go, well, I don't think that would really ruffle my feathers that much. Exactly. That's why you're getting thrown another type of chaos. And so when we start to understand what's really going on, it changes how we respond to chaos. It changes how we view the world. It changes how we see our own role in this adventure, because it is an adventure. Like, you know, I know your podcast focuses a lot on adventure and us as adventurers. Well, one of the greatest adventures is if you start thinking, God's first lesson to me was to show me how to overcome chaos, how to transform chaos, Genesis 1-2. Now, the adventure of my life is I get to step into the very things God gave me that I love to do, writing, you know, coaching, teaching, podcasting. And even if your day job isn't that thing, find what that thing is, you know, music, you know, whatever it is, drama. And then realize I was given that in part to walk in intimacy with God in that calling. And that's going to be part of how I overcome the chaos of this world and change it for others. And so your podcast, you're doing it, I think, because at least a good part of it is you have a passion for it.
Yeah.
Nobody's holding a gun to your head, forcing you to do a podcast. And that podcast is people listen as you're in your glory and you are thinking about it and scripting it, or, you know, talking to guests or inviting people or editing it. You are creating something that then ripples out and it goes into the atmosphere, and the people that listen to it are changed. And so you are bringing beauty, life, and order through your podcast. I hope I'm doing that in some measure through my book. And so the very things we love to do when we're in that outer circle of that master's will, that's where, to me, the adventure kicks into high gear, because then we go, yeah, chaos. This is a chaotic world. 2020 was one of the most chaotic years, probably for almost any listener unless somebody maybe was living in World War II or, you know,
even somehow. Then, like I was talking to my grandma who lived through both the, you know, Great Depression and World War II, and even she's been pretty rattled this year. So,
well, and here's the, you know, the problem is people will say, this was such a chaotic year. I cannot wait to get this behind me and start 2021. But see, now from our conversation, it's probably apparent where I'm going to go with this, but that's a very passive, reactive
That's response. Expectation.
What you're saying is I expect next year somehow outside of me just to be better. And man, I'm so ready for it to be better. But the reality is God has chosen us to be agents of change. We're either agents of chaos or agents of change. And if we're agents of change and we're walking with God, we don't look to another year, the flip of a calendar, the change of a date to usher in a less chaotic world. We look for how God is inviting us to help make it a less chaotic world. And so that is part of the adventure. We are all given an assignment. We are all on mission. Not doing things we don't like, but in the very things we love, those are our weapons of light, if you want to call it that. We get to enter into the world and go, I hope through who I am and what I do when I'm doing it with God, that I am making the world a less chaotic place. And by doing it, I am less chaotic, because you can't make the world a less chaotic place if you're spun up.
Yeah.
Right?
I like how you mentioned the weapons of light. I was hoping you're going to talk about it. How did you not talk about Star Wars when you talked about light swords?
Well, okay. So here's why. I am a fan of Star Wars. I really like a lot of what they do there, but I don't like, I get the story device, but I really get weary of the whole thing about the Force and this impersonal, I'm tapping into something. And when I tap into it, you know, I have this power and lightsaber, and I didn't want to bring it up kind of for that reason, because I feel like we already as a Christian community, I think, fall into the trap of seeing God as this outside force instead of this relational being who is our Father and Creator. And so I just, you know, like, again, I love watching some of the older movies, but in the newer ones especially, it gets to be really this, you know, it's kind of this new age feeling of just tap into something and master that and then use it the way you want to use it. And a lot of times for your own glory or for your own, you know, you grow higher in your stature based on how you master this thing, where I see God saying, no, we'll do it together, but it's not your power. It's not your force. It's not, you know, you're not just kind of sucking out of the universe something that I put there, but we're going to do this like a father and a son. And so that's why, but it is cool to go, God, you know, think about the first day of creation, let there be light. And yet he wasn't talking about the sun. The sun wasn't created until another day, but there was light, and the light was his light. And then we read in John 1:1, you know, with the kind of another view of creation, where it talks about how Jesus was the light and everything was created in and through him. And so we start to see the role of Jesus in creation. And the Holy Spirit's role we see in Genesis 1:2. So we see this Trinitarian role in creating, creation, life, beauty, majesty, power. But we're not then just invited to tap into the power source like an electrical outlet. You know, we're told, come with us and experience it together, and you'll be fathered in the process. And you'll grow into your true identity in the process because of relational growth, because of knowing not just about God, but knowing God. So that to me is the weapons of light is one of the levels of that circle, but it's born out of relational intimacy and not just out of kind of the force.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is going to sound like a tangent, and it is kind of, but Have you seen the Netflix series, The Legend of Voltron? Like, that is a really interesting analogy in this kind of space here.
So is that a new series?
It's a new series the past couple of years. And okay.
Is it
for
based
me,
on older?
It's the same theme. You know, you got the five lions and their, you know, magical, mystical things that they can only come together through relationship with the paladins, the pilots. That's the only thing that makes it work. And the more they relate to each other and to their lion, the more powerful that Voltron becomes. And the more they're able to influence positive change in the universe and defend, you know, those who are powerless and oppressed. And it's a beautiful analogy of the body of Christ. Like, I was actually praying with a friend of mine locally, and God brought up in his infinite humor and creativity, at the beginning of the series, they're all learning how to, you know, pilot their things, and they first form Voltron together. And one of the pilots says, "I'm a leg." And God was like, "That's you, man. You're a leg in the body of Christ."
I like that. That's good. It is a lot more like that for sure, right? Than it's depicted in other movies where it's kind of all about us and our inner strength or an outside impersonal power source that we're tapping into. Yeah, I think it's one of the superheroes. I'm a big comic fan. I grew up, loved to read Superman, Batman, the Justice League, all of those, you know, comics. And the character that I was drawn to when I was a boy, it was a brand new character. So it came out while I was reading comics, and the character's named Firestorm. And it's in the DC universe, not the Marvel universe, but I never quite understood why I was so drawn to this character. And I have on my desk, here's a mug.
Nice.
You can see the character right here. And the thing about this character is he was a high school student or college student that was caught up in a nuclear facility protesting, and a professor was at the nuclear facility, and the two of them got caught in an explosion. And so when they woke up, they were still themselves, but over time they realized the high school college guy realized he was this superhero. And when he became Firestorm, the professor was kind of a disembodied spirit that would tell him what to do.
Oh, like, wow.
Here's what you need to do. You know, so he wasn't in control of the young man, but he was the one telling him, guiding him, and helping him navigate to save people and do things. And as I got older, I realized, wow, what I really loved about that is we're so many superheroes like Batman. You're kind of a self-made man. You have all you have money, you have equipment, and you're this isolated lone wolf who does his thing, but it's in your power. But Firestorm, like, he couldn't do anything without the guidance of this sage, of this mentor that knew far more than him and came alongside him. And I was like, God was showing me, even as a boy, before I knew it, what it was like to walk in the Spirit, to walk with him, and that my true power isn't from my own knowledge or my own brute strength or anything else. It's from union with God. And it's not a perfect example, right? It's a comic, but
yeah,
but it was tapping into that desire for me of, I want an adventure, but I don't want to be doing it all on my own strength. I don't want it all up to me. I know there's got to be a better way, a way to do this with God. And so,
yeah,
I love that
from
boyhood. And I love that you're doing a podcast that speaks to the different types of adventure, because I think that's, you know, it's through adventure and the creativity within that, I think, that we get to know who we are and who God is. And that really starts to change everything, because you can't have an adventure in theory. You have to have an adventure in reality. Like, you can't. You can't sit there at your desk and be an adventurer just by imagining all these things. You have to, at some point, step into it. And there's a great saying from Seth Godin is a kind of a business mentor and just an amazing thinker, not a Christian, I don't believe, but an amazing thinker. But one of the things he says is it's not real until it ships. And by that, he means, you know, your podcast, as long as you sit there and think one day you want to do a podcast, that's great, but it's not real until you do one. And I can think all day long about a book I want to write, but it's not real until I hit send and it ships and I finish it and it's on Amazon. And adventure is the same way. Like, it's not real until we step off of our safety area into the unknown in some part of our life. And that's what I think God keeps calling us into, where these adventures and chaos is against us ever using our strength for good. It tries to cut us off at the knees in any number of ways. And so I think what's cool is to go, I can think about what Alan's saying and what Dan's saying. I can listen. I can nod my head. But it's not real till you start, until you hit that ship button in your mind of, I'm going to take ideas and now I'm going to try to start living them out with God.
I just got an idea here of a way to combine your book with another guest that we had on, Alistair Humphreys. He has got just a really great book called The Doorstep Mile. This idea of, like, the hardest mile is the one right outside your door. Yeah. So go read Alan's book, Chaos Can't, and then pick up Alistair's book and it'll go well nicely together.
That's awesome. I'm going to check that book out.
Yeah. He's a hoot too. He does a really great job of bringing adventure down to, like, we talk about on the podcast, and you guys at Wild at Heart talk about the dignity of casual adventures. Like, those little things that you do in the daily that bring you joy, that bring you life, but are not comfortable.
Right.
Necessarily.
And Morgan is super, you know, helpful with me and always talking about micro adventures.
Yeah.
Don't wait until, you know, don't have this dream of, like, the Alaskan, you know, fishing trip that 5 years later you're still dreaming of, and it may happen, but it's a dream. Like, that's good on one level for just, I want that and I'm thinking about that and I'm hoping for it, but don't miss the daily micro adventures you can have. If it's a 5-minute walk around your neighborhood, you know, into kind of off the beaten path, or, you know, if it's the bike ride that you can do today, that's better than the dream of something you may do 5 years from now. And yeah, so there's a both and, but yeah, like, you know, if people are hearing this wondering, like, how do I ever overcome chaos? Well, the book, as you know, Dan, it's written in micro steps. So every chapter is like 1, 2, and I think at most 3 pages. And so it's bite-sized pieces of my recognition of the reader of, I know life is tough. I know your brain is scrambled from all this going on. You're weary. You don't need one more project. So this invitation to being chaos free is a couple of pages at a time. Like, read 5 minutes, take that step, read another 2 pages the next day, take that step. Like, you can do this a bite-sized step at a time, but the end result is you're going to be a different man and you're going to be more prepared to be proactive in protecting your family and living from a place of calm and centeredness, like Jesus did. Jesus never got chaotic. He got passionate, and he was very passionate about a lot of things, but he never lost his cool. Even in the money changers, you know, story of the temple where he knocks the table over, he's actually knocking disorder over to bring order back into a system. So we can be very passionate, very strong men, and yet still be chaos free in the way we do it, when we do it the way God trains us to.
Awesome, man. And that is a perfect way to put a bow on this conversation. We'll have, if you're up for it, I'd love to have you back and talk some more about things we didn't get to uncover. So we'll can talk about that offline, but where can people engage with you and the book and everything else that you're doing? Where can they find you?
super easy way to get the book. It's on Amazon. It is in print, so a paperback book and also an ebook. And my first book, The Story of With, which is really all about that centeredness of pursuing your dreams with God. It's also on Amazon. It's paperback, ebook, and Audible, audio edition. And so people can read and experience more of the content there. And then I have a website, withallen.com, withallen.com. And that's really kind of I designed it to be a roadmap for how do I pursue my dreams actively with God. So they can find videos. There's nothing I'm selling on the site. It's like videos and blogs and podcasts that they can experience. And it's got a way for people to reach out to me if they want me to speak somewhere or do some coaching. If that's of interest, they can find out more. But yeah, I just would love for people to step into this because I know hearts are tanking in this season. And there is a way. It doesn't have to be like that. There is a better way. And so that's the defiant, hopeful message I want to leave people with.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for being here today, Alan. We'll have all the links for that down in the show notes on whatever platform you're listening to this on. And I just really appreciate your heart and your time today, and looking forward to the next time we get to connect and digging into the books some more and sharing it with others and seeing the effect it has on them. It's just awesome. So thank you.
That sounds great. Thanks, Dan.
Thanks for listening to today's episode of the Anthem of the Adventurer podcast. Hope you enjoyed it. If you want to keep the adventure alive throughout the week, head on over to Facebook and check out the Anthem of the Adventurer tribe, where we're sharing everything that's going on adventure-wise throughout the week. You'll see some after-action reviews of camping trips. You'll see mountain biking adventures and fun with kids and spouses and dogs. It's great. So head on over there if you want to check it out. If you're also looking for some more inspiration for adventure, check out our friends over at theadventurechallenge.com, and you can get a discount for your first purchase over there if you use the promo code DAN10 at checkout. DAN10, all capital letters. Go grab a couples challenge book or maybe an adventure calendar. Whatever you do, it's going to be awesome. And it's going to be adventurous. Now go out and live your adventure.